Today's episode of the podcast is sponsored by Dr. Carlo Bayraktarian.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Dernarek from St. Sarkis Church, along with our co-host, Mr. Veh Bezdigyan. Welcome to a new episode of the podcast. Let us start our show with a prayer of the prayers of the Armenian Church.
Hoki astudzo, jishmari dastvats, vor hortanan kedin vra, yev vernadune ichar. Yev zis lusavoretsir, surp avazanin mgurdutyamp. Meganchetsi yergin kintem. Ku archevat. Verestin makrezis, ku asvadzain gragovat. Inchpes hregen lezunerov, makretsir surp arakialnera. Yev vogorme ku araradznerut, yevinzi pasmameris. Spirit of God, true God, who descended into the Jordan and into the upper room, and enlightened me through the baptism of the holy font. I have sinned against heaven and before you. Purify me again with your divine fire, as you purified the holy apostles with fiery tongues. Have mercy upon your creatures and upon me, great sinner that I am.
Feel so close to you right now, it's a force field. I wear my heart up on my sleeve like a big deal. Your love pours down on me, surround me like a waterfall. And there's no stopping us right now. I feel so close to you right now.
Do you know how old is God?
Trick question?
A legit question.
God is eternal, so I don't know if there is an age to God. God has always been and always shall be. That a good response?
Absolutely. That's what I tried to explain to the summer camp students, but they didn't buy it. They want to know how old is God. They want to know how tall is God. And they want to know what's the favorite color of God. So I tried in vain during three different occasions. I've been asked the same questions. And today I deferred. I said, let's ask those questions to Sarpazan when Sarpazan Oshagan was visiting us.
Way to pass the buck, Derhad.
And Sarpazan said, maybe when Vehapar comes, he will be able to answer those questions. It is this kind of questions that we've been dealing with, Veh, with our summer camp students.
Very serious questions.
Well, it shows that the kids are interested to know about God.
This is true.
Let's talk about summer camp a little bit.
Absolutely. Dernarek, I always see every year when summer camp comes, I know there's a little bit of angst, a little bit of anticipation leading into it, but when it's happening, you're very excited. You're obviously enjoying the process of being with the kids, engaging with the kids on a daily basis, and yeah, I'm excited to hear about what some of those highlights are for you.
And I'm excited, especially today, because tomorrow is the last day. Summer camp will be over. But this year, it was a new record in the number of the participants. We had 79 students. We had 11 or 12 CITs, counselors in training, kids who were part of summer camp in previous years, and they want to come back and they want to help us. And the program was over 2 weeks this year. We went back to the original formula. Last year on the 10th anniversary, we had a special for 3 weeks. But this year we're back to 2 weeks. And the program was filled with different activities, time to spend together to learn a little bit about our faith, time set aside to go to church, learn about God, sing hymns, and for me to deliver special sermons for them. And that is really challenging. I don't mind giving sermons on Sundays, but giving sermons to the kids who are excited, and there was always a hook. I tell them, if you listen to the sermon, if you sit quiet at the end of the service, you will get fruit snacks, and they all faithfully attend. But today, we ran out of fruit snacks. And
oh boy. So what's the incentive today?
I just kind of didn't say anything, and I thought that people forgot about it, except for your daughter, Ve.
Uh-oh.
Eva came, and she was like, Mezi fruit snack ci dobieraj, sir. She felt very tricked.
Of course.
But I said, we have a special thing. Sir Pazans are coming today, and it worked. Today we had Oshagan Serpazan and Ushavan Serpazan, who always come and visit us. And it's very special for the kids to see our church leaders being interested and wanting to know more about them. And they had learned a bunch of songs, which were able to sing and perform to Serpazan. And both Serpazan had lunch with us. So these are some of the things that we did. We had some activities. We went to the zoo. Last week. This week we took them to see a movie.
Mm-hmm. What was the movie? I was asking my daughter yesterday. I asked Ani. She couldn't remember the name of the movie, but she said it was a lot of fun.
The Secret Life of Pets. That's the name of the movie that we watched. When I watched a preview months ago, I was in Universal Studios in California with my family. I watched a preview there, and there was this little segment where they were playing a song of System of a Down. I said, we gotta see
That's
this
the movie.
Movie. This is the movie.
That's the movie.
But unfortunately, that was the only good part about the movie. The seats were very comfortable. That was another good thing about the movie theater. It was the reclining seats, but I didn't like the movie. Kids didn't mind watching. So the food.
Well, isn't it more important that the kids are happy to see the movie? I mean, they're not always going to. The movies aren't going to be entertaining for us all the time.
You're right. You know, to me, as long as the kids are together, having fun, bonding together as friends, I think that's more important than.
Can I offer a parent's perspective?
Sure.
Just on the last couple of weeks? I didn't mean to cut you off.
Sure.
On your thoughts about the camp overall. But I can tell you, I very much enjoy the enthusiasm with which the kids leave the house because they're looking forward to that day. And when they come home, they're excited to tell me about their experience, which is different than school, where it's learning, it's a lot more structured, whereas at camp, it's about experiences and their interactions, and we did this, and what activity. Daddy, we were on the slides all day, things like that. So it's enjoyable for me, and to the icing on the cake, of course, for myself and for my wife, is that they are so wiped out that they just want to go right to bed. So it's
Isn't
really
that beautiful?
You don't have the struggle of having to argue, Heide, Angoin Katsik. We actually get them to bed without any argument, and they're usually asleep in a few minutes. So I am grateful for that. So thank you, Dan.
Thank you,
Beth.
Thank you. That's
camp.
A great testimony about the work that we're doing here, putting the kids
getting them to sleep.
On time.
Them out.
Yeah.
Tiring them out.
Excellent. I would like to take this opportunity to thank our sponsors. And I would like to specify Mr. Antranik Budakyan, who has been our sponsor from day one. If it wasn't for him, this program would not have existed 11 years ago. It was him who encouraged us to start this program. And 11 years later, it became a big production. And we're really grateful. We also had a number of parishioners who find value in our summer camp program. We had the Demirjian family who, unfortunately, when they're husband, their father, Zavin Demirjian, passed away. They wanted to allocate all in lieu of flower donations for summer camp. And it was through their donation that we had the water activities this year. We have Digin Makri Kalajan, who sponsored the zoo trip. We have two families who sponsored pizza and lunch. So it's a team effort, and we are very, very grateful. I'd like to thank all the parents who entrust their kids to our care for the past 2 weeks. And we look forward to celebrate and organize Summer Camp Season 12 next year.
You let a pause down on me, surround me like a waterfall. And there's no stopping us right now. I feel so close to you right now. Stopping us right now, and there's no stopping us right now, and there's no stopping us right now.
So, Deadhide, now that summer camp is winding down, I'm sure you have a lot of other activities, both personally with the family and the community, for the remainder of the summer. What are your plans? Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
My plan is very simple. We're not doing any more podcasts for the rest of summer because I want to take some time off.
Good.
I'm sure that our listeners
deserve the break, Deadhide.
Our listeners are tired of hearing us. But in the middle of August, we're traveling to Armenia, and we are very, very excited. It's the first time that I am going to Armenia. My wife has been there for a very short visit years ago. And we're taking the kids. I know this sounds a little crazy. We went to our pediatrician, Dr. Satine, and she gave us a lot of advice on what to do and what not to do. But
with Avedis as well?
Yes, with Avedis as well.
Wow.
Because we are attending our nephew's christening, which is taking place in Armenia. And I'm really excited. All my life, I have heard about Armenia. I have kind of lived Armenia in my spirit. And this is the first time that I'm actually going there. And I have a feeling that it's like going to be a visit home, like you're going back home.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's a place that I've never been. So I know you've been there.
Mm-hmm.
What advice do you have for me?
Advice? I would say have an open mind. Because if you go in with a specific set of expectations, you may be disappointed in some sense because it didn't meet those expectations. Or on the flip side, you may be shocked at how amazing some things are. So I just say to keep an open mind about what you're going to encounter. There's going to be some things that frustrate you. And obviously, Armenia is still a developing country, despite all the massive progress. And I've been there in the recent past. I was there in 2014. Incredible strides. And I mean, every time we go back, you're amazed at how much the construction has improved and the development and just simple things, just the lifestyle, the food. But then you leave Yerevan and you see the suffering. And it is troublesome. And it bothers us. As like you said, Armenia is always in our hearts. And we worry about Armenia. We worry about it as it's our home. It's the home for our forefathers and for us as well. So when we go, we tend to take that burden seriously, and we want to make a bit of a contribution. So you're going to feel that. You're going to feel a little bit of empathy, but at the same time, you're going to be proud. I'm certain you will feel proud, and I really look forward to coming back, and we'll hope to share these stories over the podcast.
Excellent
when you return.
Advice, Phil. Yeah. In September, when we return with the podcast, Greg, be ready. We will have a discussion on my experience in Armenia. It's not like people care to know my perspective because I'm assuming
sure
that a lot of our listeners have been there already, but I would like to share my experience visiting Armenia.
Safe travels there.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you.
Close to you right now.
Last week, two young adult members of our community went to Lebanon, went to Antilias, to be part of a conference that has been organized by the Armenian Catholicos of Cilicia. The topic of the conference was social media and Armenian youth. The participants were Tero Panosyan from the St. Illuminatus Cathedral and our own Never Oranjan, a member of St. Sarkis Church. Today, I have Never here with me at St. Sarkis Church, and we have on the phone Mr. Tero Panosyan. Never and Tero, welcome to the podcast. Tero, why don't we start with you? Why don't you tell us about this conference?
Absolutely. Thank you, Dedhai, for the opportunity, and it was a privilege to represent the prelacy abroad in Lebanon this past week. The Haman Kumar of the conference was a unique opportunity. It hasn't happened in several years, but it was a chance for the youth across our churches in the Middle East, the United States, North America, etc., to come together and discuss issues pertaining to the religious, essentially, aspect of the Armenian cause, and also, you know, the path by which the youth has sort of been distancing itself from the church, or might have been, you know, a bit more disconnected in recent years than before. So it was a unique experience, unique opportunity to not only connect with other young members of the church, but also to see how Antilias runs things and to connect with church leaders as well.
So it sounds like this was an international conference. Why don't you tell me which countries were represented in this conference?
Absolutely. We had representatives from cities like Dubai, Montreal, we had Toronto, New York, Los Angeles.
We had members from Abu Dhabi, we had Lipana, Kuwait.
So although the topic, the way that we read and the reports that we read on the news was about social media and Armenian youth, but it sounds like, from what I hear from Tero, that you also covered other things which might have been topics of religious nature and or things that have to do with the Armenian cause. Never, why don't you tell us a bit in details about some of the topics that were covered in the conference?
Sure. Thank you, Dedhai, for having me today. One of the topics that we definitely discussed was about the Haitad in regards to the return of the Catholicos to Sis. We had one of the lawyers on the case, Dr. Nora Bayraktarian, speak to us, and she discussed the steps that were taken, the current trial status as well. One of the other topics was the history of the Armenian church, in which Hayr Torkom spoke about the importance of the church and how it brought the community back together during the day.
So, Tero, you said that you also had the opportunity to kind of know about how Antilias, or the Armenian Catholicos of Cilicia, runs things. What was unique about that observance? What did you learn?
Well, I would say it all comes down to a quote said by Aram Behapad last year at the centennial commemoration of the Armenian Genocide. And he said, the Armenian cause is a cause of justice. And he said, justice does not come from humans, it's a gift from God. And I think this conference, being there with Antilias, with our church community members, we're able to see firsthand the sort of intersection between the religious and the social aspect of our cause, of our movement. So not only were we able to connect with, obviously, Hayrsuds, who in other churches, in other communities, maybe, you know, clergy members or priests might not be they might be a little bit more distant from the community, but we saw the Hayrsuds as people who had a, you know, divine relationship with God, but at the same time were absolutely, you know, seen as human beings. I mean, as people who you could speak with freely and comfortably with. So I would say, you know, connecting with clergy members and priests in that regard was very important, but also, you know, the intersection, seeing how there is sort of a crossroad between that social and religious aspect, and, you know, that's where you find the Armenian cause. That was what was unique about Antilias that I don't think you would have found if it were, you know, sort of another conference or somewhere else.
Sounds like you spent some time with friendly priests there, Tero. Never, what were your impressions? You've been there before, I believe, a while back. What was it like for you to visit Lebanon?
Last time I was in Lipana, it was about 10 years ago. So I was a lot younger. I did not connect to it as much, whereas opposed to this time, I felt more of a connection to the church. I was able to definitely understand more of what went on, the importance of Antillas and why we have that, even the importance of Bikfaya and why that monastery exists. So it was a time in which I definitely understood a lot more of what goes on behind the church, and I felt a little bit more connected to my homeland as well.
To my listeners, Bikfaya is where the seminary of the Armenian Catholicos is located. It's a place where I spent 7 years for my studies, and I have great memories from that place. So this is, a lot of people would say that this is probably once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Not too many people are given this kind of chance to go there and be part of a conference like this. Tor, I'm going to start with you. What would be the one thing that you learned from this experience, something that might change your perspective on the church, something that will go on with you in your life? Why don't you share that with our listeners?
It's very challenging. There were a lot of emotions that I experienced when I went to Antillas. First off, seeing that, you know, it really was, you know, or is rather, the last sort of bastion of defense of Western Armenia. I mean, since the time of the genocide, we witnessed the history of what our people went through and going to Tetchinovskoy and you know, seeing the walls around the monastery and whatnot. It just gave sort of an intangible feeling of understanding and a peace, in a sense that, you know, I kind of understand, even though I have the stories of my family fleeing from Marash and Tarsus and all these different places in modern-day Turkey, you know, now I have the peace of kind of having seen it with my own eyes. So that, you know, understanding is something that could have only been brought through this sort of experience, because you're not only going to these historical places, but you're experiencing them with other people who also have family members and stories from these same places, and also seeing, you know, the traditions of the church being carried through. I mean, this is what it must have been like hundreds of years ago, in the times of old, before the genocide, when we had thousands of monasteries, and you know, we only have obviously very few standing. But I would say that understanding within itself was the greatest sort of intangible.
What about you, Naver?
It's a very difficult question to answer. I definitely got a lot from the experience. First and foremost, meeting other youth who experience the same things that we do in their communities, if not more. Understanding that's a lot more of a challenge for somebody, for example, in Tehran, to gather, to be able to speak freely about anything related to the Armenian cause, just to even meet the other Armenians within the towns, or if towns even as large as Toronto or Montreal, in which there's so many Armenians, but like us in other countries in diaspora, we face that same challenge of trying to get everyone together. And just even being around so many spiritual people, it just brings a whole different feel to the environment. So without them, I don't think this conference would have had that same feeling or energy that it did.
Excellent. I hope that this, for you guys, for both of you, Tor and Naver, will be a boost, will be something that will leave its permanent imprint in your soul, so that you will always be a part of the Armenian community here, and you will be actively involved in the life of your churches. Thank you very much for your time, and may God bless you.
Thank you, Derhard.
Our guest today is an attorney of commercial litigation and real estate transaction. He is a subdeacon at St. Sarkis Church, and he is also my brother-in-law, Mr. John Megarian from the Megarian Law Firm. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Good evening, Darad. How are you?
I'm very good, John. Megarian Rug, a famous company, which has been involved in cultural aspect of Armenia for the past, I would say, 2 years, when we were celebrating or commemorating the events of the centennial, all the way to the Pope's visit, Megarian Rug has been there. Why don't you give us an idea of your involvement in celebrating the Armenian culture through the rugs in Armenia and elsewhere?
Sure. So Basically, I'll start with a very quick background about the Megarian rugs. Megarian rugs, obviously, is my family's business. My father and my uncles started the business over 40 years ago. They had great success manufacturing rugs in various countries, including Egypt, Romania, China, Pakistan, Afghanistan, India. And about 20, 22 years ago, my grandfather, John Megarian, who I'm named after, he actually came to my father and my uncles, and he said that, "I'm very proud that you guys were able to establish a successful company, but there's one thing missing from our family's life, and that's that we don't have anything in Armenia where we can manufacture rugs, help Armenia." At that time, it was a brand new country. We had just gotten our independence. So he asked my father and my uncles to explore to see if there's anything they can do to further the culture of Armenian rug weaving and to incorporate that into the business model. So my father and uncles, they went to Armenia. They explored different avenues. And at that time, they purchased Armin Carpet, which was the government-owned facilities, carpet production facilities, the only one in the country. There was over 28 facilities, but as you can imagine, the facilities were in terrible condition. So there was a large investment that had to be done in order to bring it up to date. And we had to bring in the weavers. And I don't want to say reteach them, because it's within the Armenians' blood on how to weave rugs, and the art of rug weaving is a part of our culture for thousands of years. But we had to revitalize the industry. So there were obstacles. It was tough at times. But over the years, we were able to persevere. And about 6, 7, 8 years ago, the company started to get a little bit more steam and started to move ahead. And at that point, the main concern was, how do we present this art and this culture to the world? In 2006, actually, it was 10 years ago, was the first show that we had, an exhibition in Atlanta at America's Mart, where we unveiled the Armenian collection. It was called the Armenian Odyssey. And we had representatives of the Armenian government, along with various other officials, the mayor of Atlanta, and a lot of different people to come around and support the cause. And for the first time, we unveiled the Armenian rugs in the American market. This was a very important landmark event, because it reestablished the fact that rugs were woven and part of the Armenian culture for thousands of years. We had experts like Peter Balakian, among other experts, come and give guest speeches and lectures in order to educate the people, to educate the masses that sell carpets and rugs. That show was more for retailers that come and they purchase rugs. So it was a very successful show, and that was, quite frankly, the beginning of the real introduction of the Armenian rugs and the heritage to the American markets, and also to the European markets, because the Domotec show in Germany was the next show where we had unveiled the production. Now, moving along, when the family set up the business, they were able to have up to, about 10 years ago, there was up to 1,800 weavers that were working for us at that time. Over 28 of the facilities were active. And in Yerevan, we have one facility that is the largest one. But the most important thing is that it was all in the outlying villages, where the villages were still getting jobs, and the women in the villages were able to work. And that really changed the dynamic of the industry within the country. After the 2008-2009 recession, of course, the global markets had a very tough time. So luxury items like Armenian rugs weren't being sold as much. So we were able to weather the storm. But at this point, over the last few years, we were able to get the numbers back up to the 500-600 employees. And slowly, we are now trying to reopen a lot of the different villages where the rugs are being made. Now, one thing I want to note is that the Armenian rugs are the best quality, the most beautiful rugs that you could find in the world. A lot of the Persian, Iranian rugs, they get most of the advertising, the PR. If anyone wants a rug, they'll ask for a Persian rug. But in essence, many of the antique Persian, Turkish, Azerbaijani, or any other rugs in the region were actually woven by Armenian weavers. And the proof is within the rugs, because you see Armenian letters, you see different crosses, Armenian crosses. And I'm quite sure that individuals and countries that aren't Christian wouldn't be weaving these kind of symbols, crosses, into the rugs. Now, this is an interesting fact, because in essence, like in any trial, you need evidence in order to prove what guilt or innocence. Now, connecting this to the Armenian genocide, as Armenians, we need to embrace the fact that our Armenian rugs, especially the ones woven between about 1780 and 1915, are the greatest pieces of evidence that we have of the Armenian genocide. Because these rugs, experts are able to, based on the weave, the color, based on a few different factors within the rug, they're able to pinpoint what areas the rugs were woven, and they're able to pinpoint that there's certain letters, Armenian crosses. Now, what that does is it opens up people's eyes and ears, especially for individuals who aren't from our culture and society, and it starts making them think about the Armenian genocide and about who was living in those lands in the old Armenia, in the present-day Turkey, when all these rugs were being brought from those regions. And the fact that our millions of our people were murdered during the genocide, everything that we had was taken away from us, whether it was wealth, and our rugs, our culture, the art that we were manufacturing as a people, that was also taken away from us. So these rugs, in essence, are the way that we are going to help establish the roadmap of how the genocide occurred, how our arts were stolen. And the whole point of the family business now is to further the culture and the heritage of Armenian rugs, to show the world that the Armenians have been the leaders and the pioneers in this industry, not for 100 years, not for 200 years, for thousands of years. There's certain rugs like the Bazarik rug that's in the museum in Hermitage. There's a few different museums that have rugs that date back to maybe over 1,000 years old. Even the experts now, they admit that these are woven by Armenian weavers. This is very important, and it's a landmark for our people, because now, with a new Armenia, we are trying to show the world that we are back on our feet and we are revitalizing all of our past cultural phenomenons. Now, the Armenian rugs, in essence, are something that, like other things, like Armenian wine, for instance, that people are slowly starting to understand. And it really is something that's important to my family, to further this cause and to really enrich the culture and the heritage of the Armenian rug weaving, so the world knows exactly who our people are.
It's very interesting how you find that the proof of Armenian living in the land and kind of link that to the genocide through the Armenian rugs. And I'm wondering if Megarian Rugs is trying to bring back those Armenian original designs into the manufacturing right now. And recently, when the Pope visited Armenia, Megarian rugs were all over the place. And you became part of, I'm assuming, in organizing the Pope's visit to Armenia.
Sure. I mean, it was a very unique experience for myself, for my family. It was a great honor to participate in any way. And the one thing that really stood out in my mind was when the Pope arrived in Armenia, the first thing that happened when he left the plane was that he stepped foot on Megarian rugs. Now, it wasn't just Megarian rugs. The point is that there were Armenian rugs woven by Armenian weavers. And that's what gives me chills to think about when the Pope, who billions of people follow, come to the country. Our country also wants to embrace our culture by showing the Pope, by showing the billions of followers, that this is what we offer as a people. And these beautiful rugs were arranged from the airplane all the way to the entrance of the airport, and everywhere where he met, whether it was in the presidential palaces, whether it was in the government officials' offices.
So, John, I understand that not only you were decorating all over the place with the rugs, but you also had the opportunity to meet the Pope personally and offer him a gift. What was it like for you to meet the Pope personally and be able to give that very precious gift to him?
Having the experience of having met and had gone to dinner with the Vehapads from both churches, I had experiences with high-level officials within the church. But meeting the Pope was a very different type of phenomenon. The reason being, first of all, he's not Armenian. So he is the leader of a group of people, of the Catholics, who within the Catholics, there's Armenians, there's every country in the world that's represented. So he represents the world. The religion of Christianity and the word of Jesus is portrayed through his actions and through his words. So that really made it special on a different level. Now, when we did meet with him personally, it was my father, myself, with a group of about five or six of us, and we were at the, I don't know the exact name of the headquarters, but it was where the Catholics in Gyumri, the nuns, they live, and they basically do all the good work for the community, for the children. And we were in a private room, and we were waiting for the Pope to come, and the gift that we presented to him, it was the lorry design, and obviously lorry is a very important Armenian name, because Deadhide's daughter is Lori. Lori's very, very dear to my heart as well. I love her a lot. But the Lori design is a design that dates back about 400 or 500 years. And this is a design created by Armenians. It's an Armenian design. In essence, within the design, there's a cross that it shows the connection between Armenians and Christianity. Now, we wanted to make this gift special and in commemoration of the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide, because the Pope himself has really done a lot. That the last year when he had a Badarak in Rome, and when he called the genocide a genocide, and he had the ears of billions of people around the world listening, it was probably one of the most landmark moments for us. We've been striving to get recognition from the world for over 100 years, and to have the Pope recognize the genocide really, really was important from a emotional, spiritual, and a nationalistic standpoint. So on the rug, in commemoration of all of his actions, we had inscribed that the rug was in commemoration of the martyrs of the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide, and it was gifted and inscribed in it was his name to His Holiness Pope Francis. Now, when he walked into the room, the rug was actually on the floor, and first he came and he embraced all of us and blessed all of us, and then we had the opportunity to actually speak to him, and on behalf of the family, I was honored to be able to briefly explain to him the plight of my family from the genocide, how they were able to escape the genocide. Part of them came to New York, the other part had to escape back and ended up in Lebanon. Then they found their way back to New York in the early 70s and reunited as a family, and that I'm the fourth generation Armenian genocide survivor's great-grandchild. And the Pope's reaction was a very humble reaction, just the way that you would imagine. He said the word grazie probably about 5, 6, 7 times after I had spoken, and he actually did speak back, and it was being translated. Obviously, I don't speak Italian, so there was a translator translating the conversation, and it was a very touching moment. When he entered the room, you could feel that he was not looking down. He was looking at all of us eye to eye. He didn't expect for anyone to bow down to him. He didn't expect anyone to kiss his hand. He didn't expect anyone to feel like he was any more special. When he spoke to us, when he spoke at the Badarak, and we were all attending the Badarak, it was one of peace and unity. He not only said that the Armenian Church and the Catholic Church should be one, and that the Armenian Church should combine into one as well in order to have more unity, he spoke about how we should forgive our enemies and find peace with them in order to strive to make us closer to Jesus and to be stronger spiritually. Now, these are very strong words, and they're very difficult to understand sometimes, especially when you have the pain of having lost ancestors due to the atrocious crimes committed by the Turks and the Ottoman Empire. But I was very receptive of his message. Obviously, Armenian apostolic. I feel the teachings of Jesus are the same, and the fact that he even was driving around in the most simple car, trying to show that he wasn't looking for the worldly treasures, and he wasn't trying to expose himself as being some kind of a king on earth, was a very, very important message that was being portrayed
to
the Armenian
people.
How do
you think the Armenians received his message, his gestures, his presence in Armenia?
Well, the events in Yerevan were very, very packed. There was hardly anywhere to stand. It was a very, very busy situation going on there. But the one in Gyumri, also there was a lot of people, hardly anywhere to stand and sit for most people. But The one thing that I recall is walking from where we had parked the car over to the Badarak and finding our way to our seats. I noticed all of Gyumri, all of the people were out in the streets. Each one of them had put on probably their best suit, their best dress, and they were so excited. There was a buzz. And Lennak on Gyumri is a city, well, it's the second largest city in Armenia, and it's about 2 hours out from Yerevan. But historically, that's been a city that has gone through plenty of hardships. The earthquake really had affected Gyumri in a very, very terrible way. So I felt like this was a real breath of fresh air for the people of Gyumri. It wasn't just the Catholic Armenians. It was all Armenians. Seeing all the signs of the welcoming of the Pope, seeing the Vehapar with the Pope, usually hand in hand, being able to emanate a peaceful message, it almost gave all of us hope that we could all learn from this experience and really embrace and really realize that the power of such a man can be overwhelming. But he didn't present himself as powerful. And that, in my opinion, actually made him more effective. And really, he was able to relate to every single person. The poorest of the community felt like they were welcomed in and felt like they weren't going to be turned away. And I think that really gave a very special dynamic to the entire liturgy in the 3-4 days that he was there. It was a very, very special moment for the country of Armenia, in my opinion.
Very good. John, as an Armenian-American, how do you see Armenia, and what can we learn from your experience?
As a Armenian-American who's born in New York, who's raised in New York, the first time that I went to Armenia, I was probably about 20 years old, about 14, 15 years ago. And obviously, on the altar of St. Sarkis Church, in the classrooms of Holy Martyrs, I've really been instilled with a lot of knowledge, love, and appreciation for being Armenian, for our church, for our culture, for Etchmiadzin, Khorvirap, for all these great landmarks that you get to see. But my feeling is that I look at Armenia as a baby. It's a 25-year-old baby. It still is in its development stages. If you look at some of the strongest countries in the world, let's look at America. I'm born here. I'm very proud to be an American. I love America, just as I love Armenia. But if you look 25, 26 years into America's existence after 1776, we were still in the Dark Ages. Yes, it was a different century, a different generation. But yet, if you looked around the world, other countries had different ways of conducting their life in their country. It took over 100 years for this country to have the Civil War, then in the 1900s for there to be civil rights for everybody. So the dark past of America took hundreds of years to overcome. So when I look at Armenia, I don't see that, I don't expect that Armenia would be able to overcome every obstacle immediately. It's, in my opinion, I think Armenia has been able to get further in 25 years than most global powers have in their first 25 years. And that's because, although in 91 we received our independence, we weren't a new country. We weren't a new people. We weren't a new language. We had our language for thousands of years. We had our religion for thousands of years. The history books, the culture that we have, that's what makes the Armenian Armenian. So I don't look at, per se, how Armenia is developing now as a testament to who the Armenian people are or who they will become. I think that it takes time to really try to find a new identity, because being under a Soviet-style communist regime like the USSR, it really instills that mentality within the country, within the people, and slowly but surely that mentality has been changing. And I'll give an example within my family's business, for instance. When we first went to Armenia and we started setting up shop, it was a very different experience. Over the last 10 years or so, the first decade was more difficult. The last decade has slowly, slowly, we've seen the evolution. We've seen how Armenia embraces marketing. For example, speaking about my family, in Yerevan, my father and my uncle, Tommy, they set up the Megarian Carpet Center. The reason for that is, and it, our production and what we've done in Armenia was not based on, motivated by profits or making money. The business that my family has owned for all these years would have been much more profitable if we remained producing rugs only in Muslim countries like Afghanistan and India or China, because the price points would be lower, because you have many more employees that you're going to be able to employ, and it's a different type of atmosphere in those countries. The fact was that we wanted to help give jobs in Armenia. Now, we have great funds and foundations that do a lot. And most of them now have been adapting to creating more jobs and creating, like the old quote goes, giving them fishing poles instead of giving them fish. But from my family's perspective and from what I've seen traveling to Armenia all these years, I've seen a great change within the young generation, especially the ones that we're employing within our company. The Megarian Carpet Center is broken down into three different wings. The first is the Megarian Rug Weaving Facility, which is set up for tours, and we have probably between 50 to 100, 150 tourists coming in from countries such as Spain, France, all over the world. And they come, they tour how a rug is woven, how the Armenian style of rug weaving. Armenian rugs are woven with a double knot. It's different than the Persian rugs. It's a different type of process than the other countries. It's unique, it's special. And they get a detailed tour of exactly how the organic colors are dyed. All the colors that are used in our Armenian production come from the Caucasian mountainsides, and they all go through a very detailed process of how to extract the colors and create the most beautiful colors that you'll see in the world. The second thing, the wing of the Megarian Carpet Center, was actually about 2 years ago, my family opened up the Hovhannes and Noemi Megarian Carpet Museum. Now, what this is it's a museum that shows the world all the antique Armenian rugs that my family's collected or that other individuals have given to display in our museum. And the tour continues from the facilities and goes to the museum. And my last trip to Armenia, when I was there for the Pope's visit, there was a tour of about 50 or 60 people. So I decided I'm going to speak about, there's one part where we talk about our family history and about great-grandparents and how they escaped the genocide. So I decided that I'm going to say a few words. And after I spoke, one individual came up to me from Spain. He was with his son, Ernst & Young, an accounting and consulting firm. They had brought their group to do a cocktail party at our restaurant and to get a tour of everything. And he said, you know, my mother was an Armenian rug weaver. And he said, I actually have something which I'd like you to have. And he pulled out a USB stick and he said, is there a computer? I said, sure. We went back to the offices and we put it into the computer, and he had a picture of his mother weaving on a loom. And he said, would you display this in your museum? And I said, well, of course, this is the reason for this museum. This museum isn't made for my family to show what we have or what we've done the last few years. It's to show and portray what our people have done for thousands of years. So the first thing we did was we took that picture, made it a part of the display of the different pictures in the museum. He gave us a little background about his mother's history. And this is where I really was content about what my family was doing, when I saw that this man who didn't even speak Armenian, he was in Spain, he said he didn't speak Armenian because his parents were actually, I don't want to say embarrassed, he said they were so hurt from what had happened in the past, they would try to hide their Armenianism. So we want the future Armenians to not hide being Armenian, to embrace the culture, to further the culture. And the third wing was the event space in the Megarian restaurant, where the chef that we're working with, he was actually sent to Surghazaros in Venice, and he spent about a month researching old Armenian recipes from way back when the lineage of kings were in control of the Kingdom of Armenia. So what we do is we give them a tour of the art of rug weaving. We show them the history of the rugs that exist. There's rugs that are up to 500 years old. And then the next part of the show is that they get to enjoy the cuisine, and not the Armenian cuisine that we know of, with the dolmas and, you know, what chorovats. We have over here, the chorovats. It's a very unique type of food that even my family had never made in our houses. And then there's also a different connections that we have, like with different culture groups. I believe the Tekean Culture Center, they bring their dancers, they dance, they sing. And the tourists get a real understanding of what our culture is, what our heritage is. If you're Armenian and you didn't know what Armenian being Armenian is about, you learn. If you're not Armenian, then you start to appreciate who the Armenians really are. And one other thing that really strikes me as the real reason of, you know, why it's important to further this type of causes, we also work with different orphanages within Armenia. Merdun is one example of one of the recent orphanages that we work with, and they're actually having their 10th anniversary at our restaurant and facilities in October. And what we've done is we've set up an internship program. These young girls, after they're 18, they have two choices. They either get married, or they have no other choice. They have to go on the street and they have to find a job. So we've set up this program with various different orphanages that when the young ladies reach a certain age of 16, 17, we start bringing them in for an internship, we start training them, and then we give them a job after they graduate from the orphanage that they are part of at that time. This really brings together everything that we are trying to do in terms of a cultural and heritage standpoint. And the one thing that you had asked was, what, and kind of digressing back to your question, I'm sorry, was what's different about Armenia now than, let's say, 15 years ago? And you know what's different, Dernarik? The fact that they understand marketing. They understand that they have to get out there and be known by the world. Because the one thing about our past is that we always had the greatest philosophers, writers, poets. But today's social media, today's internet allows us to really show the world and depict the strength of the Armenians. We don't have to be hidden in one corner of the world anymore, and only a few different cultures that surround us know about who we are and appreciate us as being some of the smartest businessmen, doctors, lawyers, whatever it may be, rug weavers, it could be anything. Armenians are always successful. And the fact that Armenians have always been successful in the fields they've chosen, it shows that we aren't a group of people that have to beg for money. And that's where it comes back to producing jobs, to supporting the products that come out of Armenia, whether it's rugs, whether it's wine, whether it's technology. Candy, technology, anything that it is. Now, if every Armenian, for instance, decided that they wanted to put one little rug, Armenian rug, inscribed with their family name on the rug in their home, every Armenian family would be creating jobs for their fellow Armenians. Then you wouldn't see all these issues with young generation not having jobs and wanting to stand up and complain. So as the diaspora, as the group of Armenians that have been able to escape some of the atrocities from the past, and we've been lucky enough to create new lives, we have to find a way to support the industries, to support the various different businesses that are trying to plant the seeds so the future of Armenia will yield the different fruits and the children of Armenia won't leave the country. They'll remain there and be able to further the Armenian culture and heritage as much as possible.
This was very insightful. You sound very optimistic, and that's a great thing. I want to thank you for stopping by and giving us the information that you provided about Armenia, about the Pope's visit, and all the good work that the Megarian Rugs Company is doing for Armenia. I think in a month we will be there, and I will be witnessing personally everything that you just spoke about. And upon our return, we'll give a report about our homeland. I'm very excited because it's going to be my first time visiting our homeland, and I'm happy that we're going together to Armenia.
Well, thank you very much for having me. You know, it's as my brother-in-law, as my brother who I knew and was friends with and was very close to even before we both got married. It's going to be a real great trip to go to Armenia together, to have our children experience that together, and I look forward to it. And I look forward to all of us embracing that beautiful country and the beautiful atmosphere together as one family. And thanks again for having me, Dernarik.
Thank you. Let's do the Bible reading and reflection, and today's reading is from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 12, verses 4 through 10.
I tell you, my friends, do not fear those who kill the body, and after that can do nothing more. But I will warn you whom to fear. Fear him who, after he has killed, has authority to cast you into hell. Yes, I tell you, fear him. Are not five sparrows sold for 2 pennies, yet not one of them is forgotten in God's sight? But even the hairs of your head are all counted. Do not be afraid. You are more value than many sparrows. And I tell you, everyone who acknowledges me before others, the Son of Man also will acknowledge before the angels of God. But whoever denies me before others will be denied before the angels of God. And everyone who speaks a word against the Son of Man will be forgiven. But whoever blasphemes against the Holy Spirit will not be forgiven.
The Word of God. It's a short reading, but however, it's full with different teachings of our Lord Jesus Christ. And I'm not sure where to start from.
It's a very powerful reading. And it brings to light for me a lot of the issues that I think globally we're struggling with. The consistent hate, I think that's what the consistent theme is of the past. I would say the last 30 days have been a horrible month. Globally, the amount of suffering,
violence.
The terrorist attacks, the violence, the shootings of police officers, across the board, I feel that angst, and I know that I'm sure our listeners also feel that same sense of perhaps it's hopelessness, and I hope that we can talk through this a little bit because I know I've been feeling it. And I'm not willing to accept it as the new normal, Deadhide.
We shouldn't. We shouldn't. I know that for you, this is very difficult because this is part of what you do in your daily life. We might be a little detached from it. We only know and learn about it from the news. But for you, this is your reality, and it must be very frustrating. But when we read the words of God, and it's very interesting that today's reading is very fitting to what you're describing to be as your feelings. It gives us the hope that even in the midst of all sufferings, we're not alone, and that we are in the care of God. And listen to the tone of Jesus when he speaks. I tell you, my friends, he says, do not fear. Do not fear those who kill the body. And all the harm that is happening here, it is happening to the body, because we know that our physical existence is not everything, that we are connected to a higher being, and that higher being is God, who loves us, who sent his only Son for our salvation. It's a short reading, but we hear Jesus repeatedly saying, do not be afraid. And he tells us that God, in a sense, even the hairs of your head are all counted by God.
Mm-hmm.
Do not be afraid. You are of more value than any sparrows. But for us to have that sense of confidence, there is a condition to that, which comes in the second part of the reading, is when we acknowledge Jesus Christ, when we acknowledge him to be our God, to be our Savior. And Jesus says, whoever acknowledges me before men, I will acknowledge him before God.
So, for me, I think there's a message of justice here. Those who deny God and defy God, and in spite of him knowing everything about us, there will be justice for those people. So maybe that is the little bit of solace that I'm looking for, because I don't see the justice here. I see people getting away with horrible acts committed in the name of God, using faith as a justification for horrible, senseless acts of violence. I'd like to see that this is, in fact, the justice that will be served when they do go and meet their maker.
When hate and violence becomes dogma, it's very, very dangerous. But that is not the case for us, because our faith is a faith of love and the faith of forgiveness. And as you said, the sense of justice comes from God. God will deliver justice as long as we hold on to our faith and not lose hope, even in the midst of all the hate, suffering, and violence that we are experiencing.
Well, I pray, Deadhide, that we can feel that sense of relief that God offers and the hand that's being extended from Christ.
I would like to ask all of my listeners, as I did this past Sunday during the sermon, to pray for peace. This world needs peace, and that peace comes to us from our Lord Jesus Christ. Today's hymn is Luis Zavart's Joyous Light, which is performed by Isabel Bayraktarian. I hope you will enjoy listening to this hymn. We will be back, hopefully, in the first week of September. I wish you all a happy summer. I would like to thank our sponsors. I would like to thank our listeners. And special thanks to Mr. Ve and Mr. Greg for all the hard work. May God be with you. May the peace of our Lord Jesus Christ be in your hearts. Amen.
Today's podcast was brought to you by Dr. Carlo Bayraktarian. If you'd like to sponsor future episodes, please contact the St. Sarkis Church office at 718-224-2275.